Well, thank you all for coming to this presentation. We were thinking about, you know, starting off showing the film, but I think maybe a lot of people have already seen it. Like, are you interested in, you want to see it again?
Yeah. You could do live commentary.
Here in Amsterdam, working the production of this amazing short movie. on my right, you can see Andy Gorczyk, the amazing Andy Gorczyk. It was he's been art director for the movie, and he also worked on the compositing and the lighting, and also of course on a lot of stuff on the movie. At my left, the Wonder Boy, William Renish, main animator of the movie, very talented guy. Okay, when we started this project, we actually didn't have a precise idea what we were going to do. The only thing we knew was that Tom Rosendahl wanted something fun and funny. So we spent 1 week in August to meet with each other. And we already started to think about what we could do, actually. And
do we have slides and stuff?
Like, yeah.
Do we have slides?
Do we have some slides?
We have some boring slides, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. That's...
talk about...
Wow. Wait, that's too early.
Is it?
Well, okay.
So I thought we had some slides about the concept. We still have
maybe I have some slides about the concept, actually. We can wait.
I have something in my... No.
Just a moment, please.
Do we have like early concept sketches and stuff?
Can I try?
I do have some in the other one. But I thought we weren't going to show that.
Well, I don't know. Are you going to talk about the concept or?
Yeah, just to show that we wanted just to show that actually when we started the movie in October, Sasha Kutuguren, the director, really had quite a precise idea about the kind of story he has written, and also he already added some precise sketch about the characters. So we knew that it was going to be about characters, especially bunnies. And do we have the slides about the characters? Maybe. Okay. Yeah. These are sketches Sasha did, and as you can see, there is still not the final character, but already there is the basic idea for the main character, the bunny. That this is typical of Sasha. He tried to achieve a two-niche result. Drawing this character with strange proportions and features, because basically, as you can see, okay, it's a rabbit, you can recognize it just because of the hairs. Actually, it looks more like a bear with rabbit hairs, as Sasha himself said. And yeah, the same for the squirrels, maybe, yeah. Yeah, already there was the kind of idea of this big black bunny. Annoyed by the three small creatures.
Was it three?
Maybe in the beginning it was more.
Maybe it was. One of the things that we talked about early is how much we can actually do. We ended up doing more than we could. But I think we at some point had to limit it to three. And after that, I think we also talked about just making it two, right?
Mm, yeah,
because at some point we thought it was too complicated, because I mean there's a squirrel, there's a chinchilla, and after some time it even became a flying squirrel, like the characters got new abilities and new really challenging things. So yeah, but I think we defined it as three characters.
We found that the best result also for games could have been with the three small characters and a big one.
Because I mean they're fairly cliche characters. I mean you have the evil leader, you have the stupid guy,
and you
have the follower, which is the chinchilla.
The chinchilla, yeah, remember. And so when we started, we had also 1 week of workshop with Anna Krona, who is a Disney trainer. And in this week, it has been a very interesting week. He showed us all the main rules you have to follow to build such a movie, a cartoon, basically. But also, all the tricks, the stuff he taught to us. Can apply also to every kind of story, because he talked about the three acts structure for every story. But we also add some exercise about storyboarding, for example, because we realized that storyboarding is very important for such a movie. These are, for example, the thumbnails such a made for the storyboards. I started actually to make the storyboards at the beginning, and to me, this is a demonstration on very often people can have a very different vision of the same thing. Because the first thing that actually Sasha did was to write a breakdown. A breakdown is basically all the story divided shot by shot. I mean, shot one is the camera moving towards the rabbit hole. Shot two is the camera close up of the rabbit sleeping inside the hole, and so on. And to visualize by drawing something that is only written is it can be very different from person to person, of course. So when I started to do this kind of storyboard, very quickly discovered that Sasha has a totally different view of the same thing for me. And in the end, we were wasting time in some way, because I was drawing stuff that Sasha was keep on correct. This is good. I mean, it's not it's something you have to do good, because Sasha was the director, so he had his vision of the thing, of course. In the end, we found that Sasha doing this very quick thumbnails was a good thing, because he already had in his mind, for example, the point of view, the camera had to be something like that, all the elements had to be in the shot. So, as the storyboard was going to be finally decided, Sasha actually finished the storyboard, and I switched, I can see an example, for example. The final shot is very close to the storyboard. We tried to do the storyboard as more precise as we could. And when the storyboard was finished, I switched on to draw studio the style for the environment. At the same time, Andy started to model all the characters, for example.
And I think all the whole storyboarding and the whole storyboarding process got more complicated, because also Sasha did not only have to direct you doing the storyboarding and drawing thumbnails and that, but Sasha also drew concept sketches for me, so I was able to, to model the characters. And I think that was in the first 4 weeks or so, 4 or 5 weeks of the project, when we had to decide on the basic story cues, but also we had to finalize the characters. And that's an organic process, and lots of changes happen in that area. What we didn't really do, at the very beginning, is have a very precise idea of how the environment would look like.
Yeah.
I think looking back at it, that was a mistake to treat the character development separate from the environment. I mean, you did something very great, which was taking some of the storyboards. You can see.
Yeah.
The first shot of the movie there, and coloring them, and basically most of the time, for most of the shots, that's how we actually ended up planning how the lighting looks like, and how the environment affects the mood of the story, and how the light affects the mood, and
For an environment, in the end, because of course the environment added to match the character style. So because of the characters, basically were toonish in proportions. I mean, they didn't have a realistic shape, of course, but with quite a realistic shading and texturing. We did the same for the environment, basically, because all the environment is quite realistic in texturing, lighting, shading, but with all distorted the toonish proportion. All the trees, for example, are, if you look at them, they have very, very short trunks, very big leaves, more bigger than in real, of course. And so, I think this matches quite well with the characters in the end. And Andy, of course, also made all the lighting for the main lighting for the shots. And we tried to keep it very toonish also with colors and lighting. I made a color guide. Actually, these were meant for the mood of the cartoon than for the real style. For example, you can see, these are several sketches.
This one?
And of course, yeah.
Am I going too quickly? Am I too far?
Yeah, she's a storyteller. And yeah, of course, it's a cartoon, so the colors have to be bright, very saturated, and we did this to try to match the most this kind of visual in the final shot.
And of course, there's different like in the movie, there's two basic things that like there's two basic stylistic and there's the forest and there's the field environment. There's two different environments, and they in some ways they share different aspects, but they also have to look different from each other.
Yeah.
But they still have to be in the same world. And for the forest environment, I mean, we needed a forest that was dark and gloomy to get the sense of like something's going to happen to those rodents. But it shouldn't be too dark and gloomy. I mean, that was my problem because you know the stuff that I'm doing. So it was a bit too dark, and Enrico had to push me back, and that, or everyone had to do that. But at the same time, for the field environment, things happen in the beginning of the movie that are different from the rest of the movie, because I mean that's also one stylistic thing that you have to think about is the change of time during the movie. That influence the colors and the mood of the movie, because the movie basically happens over the course of an entire day, or the morning, from the morning to the afternoon. So in the morning, you like in the beginning of the movie, you have in the first shot, you can sort of see it a little bit, but not as much as you see it in the color guides. But
we can go back.
We can go back. Sure. Yeah. There's a little.
No, back again.
First
more.
One.
This one.
Right. If you look in the top left corner, we had this change of color. Enrico actually indicated that in the storyboard. It was even in our animatic. We ended up doing that in the final shot, but it's not that obvious. But so in the beginning of the movie, the colors change from very. Like before the sun has risen up, it's still a bit cold, and then the sun is rising slowly, and things get more warmer, and sort of the tide turns when the rodents attack the rabbit, and things go a little bit darker again. But over the course of the musical montage scene, things turn sunny again at a certain point when the rabbit is rope skipping, for example, the light changes slightly.
Yeah. By the way, did someone notice that there is an Easter egg in the first shot? No one noticed it in the clouds? Anything
what?
Strange?
There, there's a,
but
there's also a bird.
Yeah.
I added a little 5-pixel bird flying in the
Okay. We are not going to that if you can find it. But okay.
Well, I think.
A very important step, of course, has been also the preparing the animatic. William also did this, for example. We scan all the storyboard plates and we mounted them in the Blender sequencer editor. It was very important because we had to find by the montage editing the perfect timing for all the movie, and it was very important, especially for the gags. Because the gags, you know, they have to happen in a precise moment, not a moment earlier, not a moment later. This is very important. And we had several, I don't know how many versions of the animatic, I think.
Well, we had one version of the animatic that was
but
changing
we changed
all the time.
We changed all the time, okay.
But, I mean, there were things, I mean, if you've seen the DVD, there were, like, deleted scenes that were cut from the movie later on, and... things that didn't quite work out that well, and we even changed the ending of the movie quite late in the process when we realized that this doesn't
work.
It wasn't working. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't
we
thinking,
move on to this.
I don't know. It's
okay.
Is it composite kind of ready? No.
Really?
I don't know.
Okay. No. Next step after the animatic. Yeah. Ellie was saying. He made the models, he started also to paint the textures for the models.
Yeah, and do the hair.
And the hair, the fur, it was very important.
That was rough.
Yeah, it was being very, very, very hard. By the way, I had, just a note, I had a presentation in Athens last week, and I met people from DreamWorks, and this guy, they told me that looking at Big Babani, they think that the hair is very good, very high quality, very close to the quality they could have in DreamWorks, places like that. So
wow.
I think this is the common.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Of course, DreamWorks has like, what, 50 people in the hair department all year.
Yeah.
You have this weird German guy.
good.
Yeah, but that was one of the challenging things, because I mean, this movie was supposed to be furry and funny. This is a sort of a milestone in Blender development. You have to do something that's at least as good as what's out there in the cinema, and then you're suddenly.
But the grass doesn't move.
The grass actually moves. You know, I actually put in force fields there. It just doesn't move enough. That's the problem. I didn't have time to re-render over and over again, but there's force fields there. If you load up the Big Bug Bunny files and you move those force fields slightly a bit more, you have more animated grass. But actually, most of the shots, the grass is animated. It's just not moving fast enough. You didn't know that?
Yeah.
I saw.
Liz moves in the beginning.
The order is quite wrong. Should we do some? Is there something about shading or modeling,
the
maybe,
libraries
or animating?
There's a thing about the pipeline at the end.
Pipeline,
but
that's
what
weird.
This is what we did in SIGGRAPH, so it's the same thing.
Didn't
do anything about modeling.
Amazing. Nothing modeling.
But you can talk about it if you want.
Well, I don't know. Are you interested in modeling?
Yeah.
Well, let me take out my notes. Well, I don't know what to say about modeling. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
Did you use nudes or?
I used NURBS and MetaBalls for everything.
Okay, cool.
It's a very beautiful process.
Can you talk a bit more than that?
Okay, I'm sorry. This microphone has gotten weird.
Yeah.
Hello. Well, modeling. What should I say about modeling? Well, okay.
If you can spend also some word about the soft bellies and soft.
The soft body. That there's actually no soft body simulation in the whole movie on the characters. It's all hand animated. I think William
can talk
about more about that.
Yeah. I mean, well.
Okay.
Yeah, it basically depends on the rig.
Well, I could talk about how we did more animation related things in general.
That's good. Modeling is boring. Next one.
Well, I can talk. We can go back to the modeling then. Or just to answer your question
about.
We'll
cover it anyway. So.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll stand up. People can't really see me. But. So, like, is this animation? This is just like to show that, you know, we didn't have all that many resources to make this film, so we kind of had to be a little bit creative, and you know, there's only really one animator working full time, and so I was going to talk about some of the main challenges we had, but since you asked, you know, one of the main challenges exactly is that, and how to tackle that. There was some very cool development going on, which enabled us to use a simpler mesh to deform a more complicated mesh. It's like a lattice, but it's better because you can use any mesh. A lattice is just like a cube, basically. And so there was a lot of development. We used that to do the facts. So we didn't use any simulations, but we did use this mesh deform modifier that allowed us to move the fat around using these bones, and then deforms everything using a simpler cage, and it ensures that we get sort of very smooth deformations, and they affect a large area on the bunny. This is just you can see, but they're just hand animated as the fat sort of jiggles as he moves along. And the reason why we did that is we found that it's a little bit hard to set up soft bodies in an effective way, and it's very hard to control as well. Like, oftentimes, you know, it'll go all over the place, or it'll do something really unexpected. Whereas with these bones, especially because it's also 2D that we can tweak it, we don't really care about what's technically, mathematically realistic. You can often make something that looks better, faster, by hand animating it using this system.
Basically, the big problem is that soft body doesn't have volume preservation for that kind of stuff, right?
Also.
Yeah.
But I can talk more about animation first.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, the other thing, like, is finding an animation style. So, like, Enrico was drawing like different styles for the images and finding colors and all that sort of stuff. I was doing animation tests. And so while the characters were being defined, I was doing trying to define the animation style, and I kind of had to fit that with the visual style as well to make sure that they kind of fit together, and you'd kind of they'll move how you might think that these sort of strangely proportioned characters would actually move, and they changed over time, and so did the animation style a little bit. So I did these kinds of small animation tests just to get started. So that this is one way you could run up a tree.
It's been the first one I think you made.
Yeah. And then another one. So sort of different approaches to doing the same things. So we tried to do that. Taking a few shots out and trying to animate them and play with it and see what kind of fits. He's actually meant to smell his armpit, but I don't know if you actually see it.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other challenge, of course, is that there's no dialogue, which meant that you rely only on the facial expressions and the body language, which made it. And the good thing though is that we obviously could spend more time on like staging and posing than rather than doing lip syncing for dialogue. But then again, like I said, you can only rely on those things. They have to be right, otherwise you won't understand it. So that's also a big challenge. The last one is consistency. We had a big problem, like when different people did an animation shot, it would just look completely different from one another. So consistency is a really big problem and kind of hard to tackle well. But the way we did it was we did this animatic you were talking about as well, and so we relied heavily on that for communication, and so we made it really fit very closely, and we used it sort of to you know, for timing and staging and poses and expressions. So we made a very detailed animatic, and this is just to show like the animatic on the top left, and you can see the final thing, and they're almost the same, so there's almost no difference. And it just shows how closely we followed it in the final. I also have some more stages, so there's like the blocked animation, sort of unfinished animation, and then there's a render of the Blender interface down here, and you can see like strange things going on with there behind the tree and stuff. So anyway, all right. So to get the timing right though, we used a few other techniques other than the animatic to get it really right. We ended up using some video reference as well. So that would be like this.
of course, you can see. We were finding out, like, how do you react when someone throws an apple at you?
And the thing is, you don't.
Yeah.
You react half an hour later, and it's like, wow.
That's right. But everyone, we tried it with different people.
Oh. Yeah,
he did. And Camel doesn't do anything. Yeah. He just sort of looks.
Yeah. So, it's a way to react.
Yeah. Oh, there's a few more examples. It's like running away in the blender's chip kitchen. Nathan, because he was the only person who could juggle, and so I let him juggle. I can't juggle, so I thought I had to have some reference. He ate it anyway. So that's Nathan juggling, obviously. All right. And then, this is the very last one. This is a piece of almost final animation. I don't quite remember why I was supposed to show it, but.
Because it has AAO.
Oh, okay.
After a while, even the animators were starting to light their scenes with AAO and just render it.
Because it was fun.
Okay.
Well, we talk more about the shading and lighting, I think, or the compositing.
Shading, lighting, compositing. I don't know. Is there anything interesting about it?
Yeah.
I think the compositing is interesting.
Is it interesting? I don't know. I did talk about the compositing Big Bug Bunny yesterday briefly in a more hands-on example, but I think I can talk a little bit about the theory behind it because I mean, let's go to the next one. That's fine. So as I said, very early on, we set some of the stylistic decisions to. You know, this would be a very cartoony movie, very saturated, very lush, and we also had to that obviously reflected on the lighting and the compositing and the whole appearance of the movie, and so we had to develop some tools in order to make this work, and like I just mentioned, approximate ambient occlusion, AAO, and. That was one of the big question marks early on. Like, are we able to you know light this whole forest? It's an entire field with grass and with trees and maybe some mountains in the background. And how can we light this thing so it still looks appealing and to a certain degree not really realistic but believable? Like you would feel like you're in this world and you can relate to the characters in it. And so we, if you go to the next one, we did some tests early on. Like this was a like just a very throwaway example to test a matte painting in the background. Clouds are, by the way, painted by Enrico Valenza and the hills.
There are some bugs in the grass though.
It
goes like wonk.
Oh really? That never happens. Come on. No. Yeah. Actually, that's a bug, yeah, that we happened to find earlier
But is it fixed then, now in Blender?
Yeah, now it's fixed.
Okay.
It's that, like, that was when we first got, like, that was 2 weeks after we got fur and hair and grass. So the bugs that you can see in the lower corner there is because of the simplification. We don't draw anything that's outside the screen, and in that example there just had to be one patch of grass that disappeared, and some of the lighting went wonk and all that. So yeah, that's like, that's what you do every day. You stare at problems that stare back at you and say, "Yeah, I'm never going to be able to fix that." Well, whatever. So that's just another test to see how basically this guy would work. And if you pay close attention to that one cloud, that's the thing that Enrico mentioned earlier.
Yeah, the first one.
Stop making it, stop playing it, it makes me dizzy.
Yeah.
Okay, I could look at this all day, I don't know.
Does that stop?
I can't stop.
How do you
control this thing?
Oh, yeah,
I think maybe you can. Maybe you can stop it.
What?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Whatever. Well, okay. That's actually a good example. My God, that looks horrible. That's yeah. Some of you probably have seen that. This is one of the first actual frames of the movie that leaked on the internet, and this one resulted in the fact that we were about 2 months into production and we haven't had a clue how the movie would look like. I mean, we had a bunch of sketches and everyone sort of thought that, okay, it's probably going to look like realistic but like cartoon, but it'll have fur and things like that. Nobody really had an idea of how it would actually end up on the screen. So that day I decided that, okay, let's make with whatever we have, let's make a final shot of the movie, and that's what I came up with. I mean, that's a day's work, and you can see that we didn't have particles. Those are still the old particles and the old grass system and some ray tracing there, but nothing really going on. And I just slammed in all the assets, all the grass that we had, and tried to make this the second shot of the movie. And as you can see, it looks like, can I say poop here? Okay. and at that point, I was like, oh yeah, that's now I have an idea how it looks like. I'm kind of proud of it. And then after a while, I looked at, like, after we had some final frames of the movie and we started improving things and we got new features, things started to look like this. If you compare it, like, after that, I happened to stumble over this old frame again. It's like, whoa. Okay, well, now it's good. Let's move on. So I was kind of, yeah, that was one of the occasions where I think it's not really good to publish things too early when you're testing stuff, because then people go like, oh my God, that looks so cool, and you're saying that, oh no, that's crap, it's just work in progress. And yeah. But yeah, that's how we tested things, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. You want to say something about it?
What's this one?
There's a purple frame.
It's about hair.
What's hair? At the same time as we were modeling the characters and William started to make the first animation tests, I obviously had to, after the basic rigging was done, I had to do the fur, and which means basically you have to set up a raw particle system on the characters, and you can edit the particles. And I mean, most of you people are probably familiar with that, but that's just a very tedious process. It's like the real thing. I mean, did you ever try to get a dog on your desk and cut his hair and wash it every day? That's kind of, yeah, that's quite some work. So it's...
But in Blender, they're better at standing still.
In Blender, they're standing still, which is good. Why is it not playing bad? Well, anyway.
For some reason.
Yeah, it's weird, but yeah.
I can play it again.
Well,
because it's a Mac?
No, you can make it look good.
Well, yeah, that's just an example of how the feathers turned out. Feathers are basically just fur, just instead of having particles, like particle strands, you have objects.
Yeah. Did you mention the new primitive strand?
Well, we can, because
because
we have that. Yeah. Do you want to say something?
No, I mean,
pretty common knowledge that that for this project we had a new first system going on, and thankfully it's Brecht here right now.
He's down there.
Yeah. This guy made this movie look so awesome.
Stand up!
Stand up. Big round. And of course our lovely Australian technical director, Campbell Barton, he also made lots of things work absolutely seamlessly. But yeah, as I just wanted to say, like, Brecht made this whole movie basically by himself. Approximate ambient occlusion, MDeath, hair, fur, and grass, and particle instances for objects and things like that.
Better management of the memory.
Better memory management for images too. Like, yeah, this guy is, yeah, he made the whole
movie. Actually, it was the first try that we had with all the environment, for example, it was almost impossible to render one shot. We were trying to do the environment with all the grass, the leaves, because Blender was continuously crashing because of memory issues, of course. But in the end, Brecht, I don't know how, but he managed to improve the memory management in Blender. So we okay, of course you need a quite powerful computer because we had 8 gig RAM, I think.
At the beginning you had 4 and I had 8,
yeah.
And then you had 8.2 after.
So, a quite powerful computer, but we could render it, and also it was taking into account that on the render farmer we only had, I think, 1 gig for RAM?
On the render farm had 8 gig of RAM.
Ah, okay, but it was one processor.
One processor,
One processor. Yeah.
But we had like 160.
Yeah, of course, it was quite a big render farm.
Yeah.
About backline, can I mention we just use a lot of libraries to build everything for all the files?
I mean that's this one here. This one. This is part of
come on, this is a great
this
slide.
Is, this is part of our SIGGRAPH presentation. I just had to show people how cool it is to, like, if you have, I mean, normally in a big studio you have these millions of applications that do lots and lots of different things, and we had the advantage of that all of this stuff was just made in Blender, so that made it a lot easier. That's basically my round of advertising. You know. That's the library system.
Okay. We made a big use of the library system, as it is. We basically built everything, every single element for the shots. Inside is our own Blender file, and we. We assign groups, each element to groups. Let's say, for example, the trees. The trees, of course, are not a single object. They are made of different elements. There is the trunk. There is also the elements where the leaves are duply verted, and the leaves itself. And all these elements were part of one group, for example, the group tree oaks. And so we could actually link everything inside a different file to build, for example, the set for the environment. It was quite a complex system, actually, because at the end we had sometimes something linked 3 or 4 times, and it was quite a complex site.
That was also a problem, like, we had to fix that.
Yeah, sometimes it was a really problem because, let's say, for example, all the trees had a link to the leaves. A tree has leaves linked from the leaves file. So you link in a set blend file the tree that had the leaves linked. And sometimes in the same set file you link also the leaf because, for example, you wanted a leaf on the ground. So sometimes you have the same element linked more and more times, and for Blender, not often, I must say, but sometimes it was a problem. You could discover something weird. For example, you had a render with a beautiful forest in the background, and then you decided that you have to add one more tree, and you re-render again, and you discovered that all the leaves of the other trees have disappeared. And you only could see only the leaves on the tree, the last tree you had. Or yeah. The opposite.
Now that you mention it, we have some cool slides here. Yeah. We can just shuffle it around, that's okay.
Yeah.
There's
this one?
No, this one, yeah, that's fun.
Okay, yeah.
This is really bad leaf day, yeah.
Yeah.
Or,
wasn't there an animation too?
There was an animation too, but, that's just like, after, like, I mean, some of these are quite beautiful. I mean, look at that, it's just like, you can never think of something like this.
It's art.
It's art, yes, clearly. And, and even made an animation of that. That's really beautiful.
This is a very cool new feature in Blender, actually.
It's called butterfly leaves, flying thing. And I can also show you some of the funky things that happen. That's lightning rabbit hole.
Yeah.
That's actually, I think it's because, we found out that's because due to the simplification, there were gigantic, absolutely enormous grass strands out of the camera view for some reason. I don't know why. It's probably some really arcane thing. So those strands were casting shadows on the rabbit hole, and you can even see it there in the background. There's like a little patch of grass that disappears, and then it slowly grows back, and it's paused, which is weird.
Go back.
So I'm talking, and you're looking at still, and it's there's a little patch of grass growing there, and slowly growing back. All these kind of things. And someday you just want to do your work, and then you have these weird things happening, and you're like, oh my god,
Okay, show the next.
Wow. It's because of the animation thing using the mesh deform. It made the rigging process a little bit more complicated, especially when you wanted to change things. You had to remember to reassign oftentimes the mesh deform modifier and so on. So sometimes whenever the rigger would forget to do that, I'd open up my animation shot and you'd see something really unexpected.
You mean that wasn't intentional?
It looks kind of cool. And especially because his facial expression at the end looks like a little bit worried. Like, what the heck is going on? And this next thing, I don't actually really remember what caused it.
It looked really cool.
It's like a horror movie, and that's what I thought. So I thought, well, I have to render this. And I did. These are some of the other.
Those are some of the things that weren't expected, but are. But I don't
know. Well. Had the bunny at the premiere.
Yeah, and the guys who own this place, I don't think they're here, but they can probably hear us on the internet. We want our bunny back. Thank you. But, what? No, it hasn't been stolen, but they kept it.
Oh, okay.
Well, the last point I just wanted to talk about is that what maybe makes this extra interesting is, as you know, that the movie itself is open source. And so, obviously, you can look at it and learn from it. But I also want to encourage people to actually, make stuff with use the material that's supplied on the DVD, and you can download from the web as well. If you have a production, you need some trees and stuff. You can
You can steal, by all means, steal this, take it and use it, or you know, screw it up and use the characters to do other things.
Or you can make another episode of Big Bug Bunny. I mean,
yeah. So by all means, I would encourage people to do that, because there's all this stuff that you can just that you can steal, and we want you to steal it.
Yes. So how many of you have actually opened the files and played with them?
Could you open it without problems?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. did you actually try to render it?
Well,
wow. And did it work?
No.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Excellent. didn't work.
Okay.
Do we have something interesting? Do we?
Do
we stop? No, we can.
Well, we
can ask questions.
Yeah. If you have questions or money to give us, also.
Yeah, we have a hat. Maybe does this one work?
I don't know.
No, maybe the
is there a sound person?
You can also just ask the question.
We'll repeat it.
Yeah,
repeat
it's not
it,
that
repeat.
Small room.
I thought the DVD you have some small readings for the characters, and the characters like more low poly. That is great. Right.
Sorry.
In the DVD, there are some files that are the character simplified.
Oh yeah.
Would you use it? Is this only for release purpose, like for people with like not high-end computers, or
yeah.
Use it to like the animatics?
No. Only for the DVD, I think.
Yeah. Well, we made some for the DVD. We actually made some simplified versions of the files, because if you cannot really load the entire forest file, for example, the one of the most complicated files was the one with the chinchilla and all the traps and the things happening. You cannot really open that on a normal, I can't open that on my laptop, so some of the files you simplified with the environment, and
yeah
those are on the DVD. The character files themselves, I don't think, they're pretty hard to render, so if you want to render the characters, it's probably easier to you have to turn down the children strands, maybe.
Yeah.
That's way like by half or so, by one quarter. But we don't have any simplified files for the characters. Yeah.
There's a rigging. I think there is a simplified rigging, but not
for rigging. No, there's no simplified rigging file, right?
Well, I think the point of those simplified versions is also for the developers to be able to test, releases of Blender, that they still work with these features, and it's easy to distribute around, because if everything is local in the actual production files, everything's linked, and that's very useful in some ways. But also, if you want to, send someone a file or a scene, you need to send them, 100 files, because everything's linked into each other. So we need just this view. Sort of files where everything's local, that is everyone can open and play around with more easily. So they're kind of a little bit more easy to use than the actual ones. That's the idea.
That's great. Any more questions? Come on, don't be shy.
Anyone want
this
to know what's the Easter egg at the beginning?
Well, I don't know. If there's lots of things that we didn't talk about and lots of dark secrets.
Yeah.
So if you want to know dark secrets, then you can ask us. We won't tell them otherwise, so we're here for you.
Yeah.
Do you have dark secrets?
Yeah, we have a meeting with Darth Vader one day.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. He's a nice guy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, but all full of breath.
I don't know, what's your plan next?
The question was, what's our plan next? I don't know, what's your plan?
My plan or his plan? Or
you don't know my plan?
The team, I think there are no next plans for the team as a team.
There are.
Oh,
it's like a revival in like, in 10 years.
20 years, I think, 25.
Then they'll do a revival, maybe.
Yeah.
2.5.
It's one of the dark secrets. Yeah.
I got a question. You talked a lot about the process of making movies, but how was it to spend 6 months with the same kind of people all in one room? Did you have a lot of fights?
Can you repeat it?
We're talking about the technical parts of how it was to work on to make this movie, but how was to live with the same people for 6 months now in Amsterdam, if we had a lot of fights. And I must say that yes, we had a lot of fights. But of course it was a normal thing. I mean, sometimes it's very we are very different persons. Of course, we come from different countries. I'm the older one, actually. Also, this I think. I'm 46. So basically, I think I'm 46. Sasha is 30. Andy is 25, 27. 23. Oh, it's younger. I mean, so no, there is, of course, there are a lot of differences, cultural differences, and also differences in the way one can think about things, just because of these differences. So it was very easy to fight, to misunderstand something, but in the end, we managed to work as a team. I think we managed it quite well. And
But I mean, it's not like. It's not like it's a normal movie production in that sense, because it's more like, you know, as you said, it's more like living with each other, because we are working on this on a very tight deadline, and we're working like 24 hours per day, and 16 hours a day is the regular sort of thing, and so you're
working like 26 hours a day, weren't you?
Are there that many hours?
Yeah.
I wish there were that many hours in a day sometimes.
Yeah, but for example, Sasha every day went out to buy the food for us. It was very, very nice.
Did he clean the toilets?
No, Nathan cleaned the toilets.
That was the day that Nathan stole the toilet cleaning from Sasha.
Oh, really?
Sasha regularly cleaned the toilets every weekend.
Oh, okay.
I did the vacuum cleaning.
We should show the tour of the Blender Institute. We don't have it, I don't know.
It's on the interwebs.
Well,
if you can get the interweb connection. Yeah, it's on our blog.
By the way, okay, for me, on my side, it has been a really very interesting experience. Of course, I've learned a lot, not only about Blender, not only the way to make a movie, but also about myself. I mean, as a freelance, I've always been used to work by myself. And to work in a team is a quite different thing. I learned a lot, I must say. I'm very glad to have been here in Amsterdam for 6 months. Very good experience.
You don't just learn stuff about the software that you're using. You learn so much about the process as well. I mean, personally, I've learned a lot of things about how you look at your own work, how you're critical with your own work, but don't overdo it, and sort of the way that this whole process works, that you have to go back and review things, and you have to look at your work in a certain way to be able to improve it. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I took with me from this project. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing that might be just mildly interesting is the sort of structure, the team roles. And they kind of evolved over time a little bit, and we were a very small team, so we had the advantage that you can agree on things and discuss things and be more like on the same level, and that was unique, I think, because of the way it's made.
Like the way that you shared animation, for example, like Sasha, you, Nathan, like you did the crazy stuff, Nathan did.
Also,
you mean that stuff?
But I also mean in terms of like who makes the decisions, and how do we move forward, and so I think that also tries to
What's happened with the production? Your relationships with the production?
With Tom Rosen, that you mean? With the production?
When you any conference with people who are giving you money.
With the producer, you mean?
Yeah.
With Tom? No,
yeah.
Absolutely. Tom is the sweetest person in the world.
What do you mean?
He's not there now. You can tell him.
Okay. Well,
that's why I asked.
No, seriously. Well, I
think Tony, well, he had to push us sometimes, but not much actually.
Actually, most of the time he had to restrain us.
Yeah, yeah. So we, from my point of view, I didn't have any contact with the producer actually. The normals, well, okay. Sometimes you can discuss also with the producer.
At least none that we don't remember, that we do.
Yeah,
remember.
We don't.
I forgot most of the stuff.
I'll say something about Tom. He is amazing at persuading people to do stuff. He's so persuasive. And I think that's one of the reasons he's gotten so far with Blender, is that he looks at you and then he's very good at motivating you. And then you tell him that the schedule is impossible and it's totally...
Yeah.
But then he'll just look at you and smile and then you go, oh, okay.
That was actually great in the beginning, like in the pre-production workshop, the schedule. Like we even started
in the first week knowing that this was impossible. Like in the beginning it was like 2 weeks for rigging and we had to do modeling at the same time, like what? Even the schedule was really, really impossible. And I think, the fact that we pulled it off was also a very good, very good testament for how great Tom is as a producer. Because, I mean, production is planning most, yeah. Okay, here's a question.
Yes, and you talked a little bit about timing and about
gestures
in the animation. When was sound
So the question was, when was the sound engineering involved in the whole timing and everything?
Because of the short time that we had to realize the film, oftentimes you do the music and the sound effects after you've done the animation, right? But in animation, you also do the words and the acting first. But we didn't have that here, and. But we had so little time, we didn't have the luxury of being able to do the music and the sound effects afterwards. So the sound guy most of the time was working off of the animatic. So he'd be doing sound effects for animation that wasn't done yet. And so I think that was very hard for him. We just had to tell him, like, okay, he's walking here, and you just put in the footsteps. But he'll be like, there are, he's not walking yet. But he's like, nip. And then, so that was very hard to be able to do it overlapping like that. And also the music. He also did the music to the animatic, not the... And that's very hard, because when the animation comes in, oftentimes you... Or maybe the musician realized, oh, that's where the cue should have been. And then you had to go back and change things.
But it's also, music is a great inspiration for your work. I mean,
if you're looking at this gray shaded black and white animatic for most of the production, and after a while you get music, you get to listen to music that's happening, like you get music to it, and certainly your imagination starts to work, and you're kind of like, it's, I like to say, like, now it feels like a movie. Yeah, that's also really great for the whole process.
One more bit. Part of the team worked in the Elephant Rings, right?
So just him.
You and Tom as well. I mean, how did it help in this new project? I mean, how do you think this abuse that right?
Okay, the question was, I'm not sure if you all heard it, how did the experience from Elephant Stream help us in the production of Big Love Bunny?
Yeah, as a team member.
I don't know. To me, at least, it was a big advantage that I had already been, there once before, and that's also one of the reasons why Ton asked me to be in a project, because I had to share I could share some of the experience that I had on Elephant Stream, which I think it helped a lot that someone would know where the problems are. I think at the beginning of the production, I made a little PDF. I'm not sure if you still have it.
Yeah.
I made a little PDF, like the things that you have to watch out with these kind of things and like that. And it was extremely helpful to know that, okay, for example, how SVN works as a production tree and how you organize the files and all that kind of stuff, and also for the planning. I mean, there's a certain way that you have to plan for working with six people. You can't plan the same things that you can do for like 20 people or so. So those things help immensely. And of course, we had like more final stuff. At least the software was working, and we had computers when we started at Big Bug Bunny. We didn't have that luxury on OpenStream. Questions?
Yeah, I wanted to know how was it to work toward the end of the project when you brought the whole team from Boston Dreams from, well, you gave jobs to people in Australia and elsewhere in the world by internet. How was it to manage?
Right. You're asking how was it? At the end of the project, we took certain shots. We realized we wouldn't be able to complete them, and then we asked people in the community to help us finish the animations. And so we did a little bit of outsourcing to the people that were willing to help us. And so you're asking what the experience was doing that. Well, I think it really showed us how the people we sent the animations to were very talented people. And it really showed us the importance of getting together in Amsterdam, because everyone, I think, has been thinking about doing projects online, like every other day there's a thing on Blender Artists where it says, let's make a movie together, and you know, we'll just split it up and it'll be great. And I really think it would be cool if people did that. I think that's, you know, can be encouraged, and I think it'd be cool, but it showed us how hard it is when you're decentralized like that. Because communication becomes a huge issue, and you have to spend more time communicating back and forth than actually working, and it's so much slower. So, you know, if anything, it showed us just how inefficient that is. Even though we had the most talented people helping us, it wasn't so well.
The animatic.
Yeah.
You need certain ways to communicate, and most of these ways have to be visual. So the animatic helped.
It probably helped, but even so, there was lots of back and forth, and
of course, lots of emails, long texts, and stuff like that.
It was just a bother, I think.
But would it be possible to, because with Africa, I think feeling of the project was a little bit more open, because they asked for animation from the community, and I think someone even made a whole character for you. Do you think it would be possible
It depends on the project itself, because I mean, games are very different from movies. Games are very modular. I mean, you can easily animate for a game because there's only one action. There's one tail whip. There's a jump, and there's things like that. You can easily ask for other people to do these things because they're not necessarily connected with the bigger thing, like the story or things like that. And it's easier to communicate things like animating for a game. And if the characteristics of your production is that it is very modular, then it's also easier to develop it over the internet. But you have to watch out. It can't be, maybe there's problems having it too modular, because I mean, you still need one person to decide, okay, where does the modularity end? I mean, so what, like, or am I right, or is it
probably,
I mean, we were talking about this, like how open, when the final product is open source, and we're obviously talking about it while we work, but do we want to make it like, you know, involve the community more? And I think that's an interesting thing, but it's also very hard, especially when you're limited time and so on. You end up, like I said, spending much more time and effort doing these communication, and but it might be very interesting. I know that Ton was talking at one point about making the project a little bit more like Big Brother, right? You all know Big Brother. And so he wanted to install cameras in all the rooms, and then you could like communicate back and forth, and it would be like some kind of very weird hybrid project.
That's where Dorian is going to go.
Maybe, yeah. So, but it's something that's interesting.
We just have one camera on the toilet, though.
Yeah.
didn't know.
Maybe it's a question for you, Ton, as well.
Yeah.
What?
About, you know, making a project more
open.
Yeah, and more with involvement with the community.
But it was your answer.
That it was
it's hard.
Hard, but that it might be interesting. But maybe that's your answer.
So in what kind of way open? So who was that question? So how do you want to have more open? In what way?
Well, actually, I was thinking, since a lot of the smaller studios are starting to, maybe not professional studio, but you've got an NTRK studio from Jason Johnster. Well, I'm a Monday studio. There's promotion studio in Australia now that kind of go under a lot. And will it be possible to, instead of having a single studio at the Berlin Institute working, well, along a project,
but then you also have to make a bigger project, right? And when last year, other this year, after this project, when somebody asked me, okay, so when are you going to do physical? I said, well, it might happen someday, but it's very complicated. Because I don't think it's easy or even feasible or even desire to get like 50 people coming to Amsterdam. And then you build a whole big studio to make a film. Then after that, after 2 years, then what? Send everybody back? What? That's no real business. But if you would decide to make like a virtual studio worldwide with 6 or 10 smaller units, then you can have a unit in Finland, in Amsterdam, one in America, Canada, Australia, Singapore, and try to set up some kind of cooperation between them. This is really complicated. It might be feasible, but artists are better when they can work together in the same place. If you separate them, you get problems. So that's still a thing I can't solve for. But the next project is small, will be 6 to 9 people, so we won't have that big of an issue. But if people in other studios or artists say, well, I would love to collaborate or cooperate with this project, we always try to put it in. That has never been easy. But the quality of the artist and the project goes up really well. I don't know if you mentioned the animation volunteers.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
Yeah, but it was extremely welcome that we had this help. But the problem in many cases was that the animation that came back, even when they were really good, for us it was also evident that it didn't fit in well. But it was a totally different style. If you do this in one studio, it's very easy to talk about it and say you have to make a movement and this or that. If you have to do this online, then one person is almost full-time managing the externals. And then it would probably be almost as efficient as if you would do it all yourself. That's always a little bit of a problem. So I don't know how to solve the problem.
Do you have any reaction?
Do you have any reactions from big 3D studios? You mentioned that some Disney guy helped you and
some reactions?
Yeah.
Well, we've
bringing
Blender to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how many people, how many of you have followed that, but luckily we had chance to present Big Bad Bunny at the Computer Animation Festival at SIGGRAPH. And luckily we also had the chance to make a little tour of all the 3D studios there. We went to Disney Feature Animation, we went to DreamWorks and Rhythm and Hues. And most of the time the reactions were quite positive. The Rhythm and Hues guys thought that Blender looks beautiful, the interface rocks. No. Really, they said that.
Yeah.
I was surprised. It's wonderful. Yeah. I mean,
they looked at the nodes and they said, wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, you can actually see the image while you're tweaking things. That's amazing.
You also mentioned Arno, right?
Yeah, of course we mentioned Arno. Of course he got us into this whole computer animation festival and he helped us so much during the production with feedback, and we learned so much from him about the process of making a movie, and that was really helpful to see that. And
Are there any other reactions from professionals, professional studios? What were the reactions from DreamWorks, Sigra, audience, whatever? You're smiling, say something.
Well, I already know almost for sure that with the next project, we'll get support from. We have somebody in Weta, a Boston guy who worked on Lord of the Rings and came from that kind of project. We'd love to come out for consultancy or helping out. DreamWorks said the same to me, they want to help out. Arno in Disney would love to come over to do another workshop. But that kind of connection we do have at this moment. But I'm still not convinced, nor even much interested in having a Blender in a big studio. They have the best tools in the world, the best developers. But what I am interested in is those studios hire Blender artists. Of course, they have to look at it. That's what they are interested in. But Blender will fit in a pipeline. If you have a big studio, they're not going to make a whole film only in one subject package. You have to do modeling or wire removal or all kinds of little things. And you can do that with any tool. You can do the Blender, or you can do the in-house tools, or you can do Maya, whatever. That's,
easy to learn. Any other questions?
More questions?
Yep, good. It's good.
Okay.
Yay!